Furin, riding behind Sionet, wore a thunderhead for a face, but it was Tyrell who made everything even less simple by tossing something to the ground. "I found this behind him," he said, "where he might have dropped it, running." At first, Perrin did not know what he was looking at, a long loop of rawhide thickly strung with what appeared to be tags of shriveled leather. Then he did know, and his teeth bared in a snarl.
"The prophet would have our ears, you said."
The stubble-cheeked man stopped gaping at Sionid and licked his lips.
That was Harry's work," he protested. "Harry's a mean one. He likes to keep count, take trophies, and
Shrugging in his captive coat, he sank in on himself like a cornered dog.
"You can't tie that to me. The prophet'll hang you if you touch me. He's hanged nobles before, fine lords and ladies. I walk in the light of the blessed Lord Dragon."
Perrin walked a stepper to the man, careful to keep the dun's hooves clear of the thing on the ground. He wanted nothing less than to have the fellow's scent in his nose, but he bent down, putting his face closer. Sour sweat warred with fear, panic, a tinge of anger. A pity he could not sniff out guilt. Might have dropped was not had dropped. Close-set eyes widened, and the man pressed back against Terrell's gelding. Yellow eyes had their uses.
"If I could tie that to you, you'd hang from the nearest tree," he growled.
The fellow blinked, began to brighten as he understood what that meant, but Perrin gave him no time to regain his bluster.
"I am Perrin Ebarra, and your precious Lord Dragon sent me here. You spread the word. He sent me, and if I find a man with trophies, he hangs. And if I find a man burning a farm, he hangs. If one of you looks at me cross-eyed, he hangs. And you can tell Massima I said so, too."
Disgusted, Perrin straightened.
"Let him go, Tyrell. If he isn't out of my sight in two shakes..."
Terrell's hand opened, and the fellow dashed off at a dead run for the nearest trees, never so much as glancing back. Part of Perrin's disgust was for himself. Threatening. If one of them looked at him cross-eyed? But if the nameless man had not cut off ears himself, he had watched it and done nothing. Fael was smiling, pride shining through the sweat on her face. Her look washed away some of Perrin's revulsion. He would walk barefoot through fire for that look. Not everyone approved, of course. Sionid's eyes were squeezed shut, and her gloved fists quivered on her reins, as though she desperately wanted to yank that scarf from her mouth and tell him what she thought. He could guess, anyway. Edara and Navarin had gathered their shawls around them and were eyeing him darkly. Oh, yes, he could guess.
"I thought it was to be all secrecy," Tyrell said casually, watching the stubble-cheeked man run. "I thought Massima wasn't to know you were here till you spoke in his pink ear."
That had been the plan. Rand had suggested it as a precaution. Sionid and Missouri had insisted on it every chance they got. After all, prophet of the Lord Dragon or no, Massima might not want to come face to face with someone Rand sent, considering the things he was said to have allowed. Those ears were not the worst, if the tenth part of rumor was to be believed. Edara and the other wise ones saw Massima as a possible enemy, to be ambushed before he could set his own trap.
"I'm supposed to stop that," Perrin said, gesturing angrily to the rawhide string on the ground.
He had heard the rumors and done nothing. Now he had seen.
"I might as well start now."
And if Massima decided he was an enemy, how many thousands followed the prophet? Out of belief or fear, it did not matter.
"It stops, Tyrell. It stops!"
The Mirandian nodded slowly, eyeing Perrin as though seeing him for the first time.
"My lord Perrin," Megden said.
He had forgotten all about her and her friends. The others had gathered with her a little way off, most still afoot. There were three men aside from the fellow who had followed Megden, and two of those were hiding behind their horses. Linny appeared the wariest of all, eyes focused on him worriedly. She had her horse close to Megden's and seemed ready to seize the bridle herself. Not to stop the younger woman bolting, but to bolt herself and take Megden with her. Magdon herself appeared completely at ease, but she also studied Perrin. Little wonder, after all that talk of the prophet and the dragon reborn, on top of his eyes. Not to mention an eye said eye gagged. He expected her to say that they wanted to go now, immediately. But what she said instead was,
"We will accept your kind offer. A day or two resting in your camp might be just the thing."
"As you say, Mistress Magdon," he said slowly. Masking his surprise was difficult, especially since he had just recognized the two men trying to keep their horses between them and him. "Taverin work to bring them here? A strange twist in any case."
"It might be just the thing at that."
Chapter 8 A Simple Country Woman. The camp lay about a league farther on, well back from the road among low wooded hills, just beyond a stream that was 10 paces width of stones and only 5 of water, never deeper than a man's knees. Tiny green and silver fish darted away from the horses' hooves. Casual passers-by were unlikely to come on them here. The nearest inhabited farm was over a mile away, and Perrin had checked personally to make sure those folk took their animals to water elsewhere. He truly had been trying to avoid notice as much as possible, traveling by back roads and the smallest country paths when they could not keep to the forests. A futile effort, really. The horses could be pastured wherever there was grass, but they required at least some grain, and even a small army had to buy food, and a lot of it. Every man needed 4 pounds a day, in flour and beans and meat. Rumors must have been floating all over Gil-Adan, though with luck no one suspected who they were. Perrin grimaced. Perhaps they had not, until he went and opened his mouth. Still, he would have done nothing differently. It was 3 camps, really, close to one another, and none far from the stream. They traveled together, all following him, obeying him, supposedly. But there were too many personalities involved, and no one was entirely sure the others aimed at the same goal. Some 900 or so winged guards had their cook fires crowded between rows of picketed horses in a broad meadow of trampled brown grass. He tried to close his nose to the mingled smells of horses, sweat, dung, and boiling goat meat, an unpleasant combination on a hot day. A dozen mounted sentries rode a slow circuit in pairs, their long, red-streamered lances all at precisely the same angle, but the rest of the Mayenners had shed breastplates and helmets. Coatless, and often shirtless in the sun, they lay sprawled in their blankets or diced as they waited on the food. Some looked up as Perrin passed, a number straightened from what they were doing to study the additions to his party, but none came running, so the patrols were still out. Small patrols, without lances, who could see without being seen. Well, that was the hope. It had been. A handful of Gaishin moved at various chores among the wise ones, low gray-brown tents on the sparsely wooded crest of the hill above the Mayenners. At this distance, the white-robed figures appeared harmless, eyes downcast and meek. Up close, they would look the same, but most were Shido. The wise ones claimed Gaishin were Gaishin. Perrin did not trust any Shido out of his sight. Off to one side on the slope, beneath a bedraggled sour gum, perhaps a dozen maidens in Cadensor knelt in a circle around Sulin, the toughest of them, despite her white hair. She had sent out scouts, too, women who could move as fast afoot as the Mayenners on their horses, and were much more likely to escape unwanted attention. None of the wise ones up there were in the open, but a slender woman stirring a large stew kettle straightened, knuckling her back as she watched Perrin and the others pass. A woman in a green silk riding dress. He could see the glare on Masuri's face. Aes Sedai did not stir kettles, nor perform 20 other tasks the wise ones had her and Sionid doing. Masuri laid it at Rand's feet, but he was not here, and Perrin was. Given half a chance, she would peel his hide for him. Idara and Navarin turned up that way, even in those bulky skirts barely disturbing the layers of dead leaves that carpeted the ground. Sionid followed, her cheeks still bulging around that scarf. She twisted in her saddle, peering back at Perrin. If he could have believed an Aes Sedai looking anxious, that was what he would have called her. Riding behind her, Furin and Terrell wore scowls. Missouri saw them coming and hastily bent back to the black kettle, stirring with renewed vigor, trying to make out that she had never stopped. So long as Missouri stayed in the Wise One's charge, Perrin thought he did not have to worry about his hide. The Wise Ones seemed to keep a very short leash. Navarin looked back over her shoulder at him, another of those dark stares he had been getting from her into Dara, since sending his warning, his threat, by the stubble-cheeked fellow. Perrin exhaled in exasperation. He did not have to worry about his pelt unless the Wise Ones decided they wanted it. Too many personalities, too many goals. Megden rode at Fael's side, seemingly paying no attention to what they passed, but he would not have wagered a split copper on it. Her eyes had widened a hair at sight of the Mayenner sentries. She knew what red breastplates and helmets like rimmed pots meant, as surely as she had recognized an Aes Sedai face. Most people would not have known either, especially not folk dressed as she was. She was a mystery, this Megden. For some reason, she seemed vaguely familiar. Linian Tollenvor, that was what he had heard Megden call the fellow who had ridden after her. Young Tollenvor, though there could not have been more than 4 or 5 years between them, if that, stayed as close behind Megden as possible, with Aram in the way, trying to heal Perrin. So did a little stick of a fellow with a pursed mouth called Balwer, who seemed to pay less heed to their surroundings than Megden pretended. Even so, Perrin thought Balwer saw more than she did. He could not say why, precisely, but the few times he had caught the bony little man's scent, he had been minded of a wolf testing the air. Strangely, there was no fear in Balwer, only quickly suppressed ridges of irritation shot through with the quivery smell of impatience. The remainder of Megden's companions trailed along well back. The third woman, Brianna, was whispering fiercely to a hulking fellow who kept his eyes down and sometimes nodded silently, sometimes shook his head. A shoulder striker and street tough, if ever there was one, but the short woman had an edge of toughness about her, too. The last man sheltered behind those two, a stout man with a battered straw hat pulled low to hide his face. On him, the sword the men all wore looked as strange as it did on Balwer. The third part of the camp, spread out among the trees just around the curve of the hill from the Mayenners, covered as much ground as the winged guards, though it held far fewer people. Here the horses were picketed well away from the cook fires, so the unblemished smell of dinner filled the air. Roasting goat, this time, and hard turnips the farmers probably had intended to feed to their pigs, even with times as hard as they were. Close on to 300 Two Rivers men who had followed Perrin away from home were tending meat on spits, mending clothes, checking over arrows and bows, all scattered in haphazard clumps of 5 or 6 friends around a fire. Nearly every one of them waved and shouted greetings, though there was too much of Lord Perrin and Perrin Golden Eyes to suit him. Fael had a right to the titles they gave her. Grady and Niald, unsweating in their night-black coats, did not cheer. Standing beside the cook fire they had built a little away from everyone else, they merely looked at him. Expectant looks, he thought. Expecting what? That was the question he always asked himself about them. The Ashaman made him uneasy, more than Aes Sedai or Wise Ones. Women channeling the power was natural, if not exactly anything a man could be comfortable around. Plain-faced Grady appeared a farmer, despite his coat and sword, and Niald a popinjay with curled mustaches. Yet Perrin could not forget what they were, what they had done at Demise Wells. But then he had been there, too. Light help him he had. Pulling his hand from the axe at his belt, he dismounted. Servants, men and women from Lord Dobrin's estates in Carrion, came running from the lines where the horses were picketed to take their mounts. None stood taller than Perrin's shoulder, country-clad folk forever bowing and curtsying obsequiously. Fael said he just upset them when he tried to make them stop, or at least not bob around him so often. In truth, that was how they smelled when he did, and they always went back to bobbing in an hour or two. Others, nearly as many as the Two Rivers men, were working with the horses or around the long rows of high-wheeled carts that hauled all their supplies. A few were darting in and out of a large red-and-white tent. As usual, that tent made Perrin grunt gloomily. Berylaine had a larger one back in the Mayenner part of the camp, plus one for her two maids and another for the pair of thief-catchers she had insisted on bringing. Anura had a tent of her own, and Galien as well, but only he and Fael possessed one here. For himself, he would have slept under the sky like the other men from home. They had nothing over them at night but a blanket. There was certainly no fear of rain. The Carianan servants bedded down beneath the carts. He could not ask Fael to do that, though, not when Berlain had a tent. If only he could have left Berlain in Carian. But then he would have had to send Fael into Bethal. A pair of banners on tall, fresh-cut poles in the middle of a clear space near the tent soured his mood further. The breeze had picked up a trifle, though it was still too warm. He thought he heard that thunder again, faint in the west. The flags unfolded in slow waves, collapsed of their own weight, rippled open again. His crimson-bordered red wolf head and the red eagle of long-dead Menetherin, out in the open again, despite his orders. Perhaps he had stopped trying to hide after a fashion, but what was now Gialdan had been part of Menetherin. Alejandro would not be soothed by hearing of that banner. He managed a pleasant face and a smile for the stocky little woman who curtsied deeply and took stepper away, but it was a near thing. Lords were supposed to be obeyed, and if he was supposed to be a lord, well, he seemed to be making a poor job of it. Fists on her hips, Magdan stood studying those rippling flags as her horse was taken off with the rest. Surprisingly, Brianna had both their bundles held awkwardly. She wore a petulant scowl directed at the other woman.
"I have heard about banners like those," Magdan said suddenly,
and angrily. There was no anger in her voice, and her face was smooth as ice, but her fury filled Perrin's nose.
"They were raised by men in Andor, in the Two Rivers, who rebelled against their lawful ruler. Ibarra is a Two Rivers name, I think."
"We don't know much about lawful rulers in the Two Rivers, Mistress Magdan," he growled. He was going to skin whoever had put them up this time, if stories about rebellion had spread this far. He faced too many complications already without adding more. "I suppose Morghese was a good queen, but we had to fend for ourselves, and we did." Abruptly he knew who she minded him of. Elaine. Not that it meant anything. He had seen men 1,000 miles from the Two Rivers who could have belonged to families he knew back home. Still, she had to have some reason for anger. Her accent could be Andorran. "Things aren't as bad in Andor as you might have heard," he told her. "Camlan was quiet last I was there, and Rand, the dragon reborn, means to put Morghese's daughter Elaine on the Lion Throne." Far from being mollified, Magdan rounded on him, blue eyes blazing.
"He intends to put her on the throne?" "No man puts a queen on the Lion Throne. Elaine will claim the throne of Andor by her right."
Scratching his head, Perrin wished Fael would stop watching the woman so calmly and say something. But all she did was tuck her riding gloves behind her belt. Before he could think of what to say, Linny darted in, seizing Megden's arm and giving her a shake fit to rattle her teeth.
"You apologize," the old woman barked. "This man saved your life, Magdan, and you forget yourself, a simple country woman speaking so to a lord. Remember who you are, and don't let your tongue land you in hotter water." "If this young lord was at odds with Morghese, well, everyone knows she's dead, and it's none of your affair in any event. Now apologize before he grows angry."
Magdan stared at Linny, her mouth working, even more startled than Perrin. Again she surprised him, though. Instead of erupting at the white-haired woman, she slowly drew herself up, shoulders squared, and looked him in the eye.
"Linny is entirely right. I have no right to speak to you so, Lord Ibarra. I apologize. Humbly. And I ask your pardon."
"Humble?" Her jaw was stubborn, her tone proud enough for an Aes Sedai, and her sense said she was ready to chew a hole in something.
"You have it," Perrin said hastily, which did not seem to placate her one bit.
She smiled, and maybe she intended gratitude, but he could hear her teeth grinding.
"Were women all crazy?" "They are hot and dirty, husband," Fael said, putting a hand in at last. "And the last few hours have been trying for them, I know. Aram can show the men where to clean themselves, I will take the women with me. I'll have damp cloths brought to wash your hands and faces, she told Magdan and Lenny. Gathering up Brianna with a gesture, she began herding them toward the tent. At a nod from Perrin, Aram motioned the men to follow him.
As soon as you finish your wash, Master Gil, I'd like to talk with you, Perrin said.
He might as well have made that spinning wheel of fire. Magdan whipped around to gape at him, and the other two women froze in their tracks. Talanvor was suddenly gripping his sword hilt again, and Balwar rose on his toes, peering over his bundle, head tilting this way, then that. Not a wolf, perhaps. Some sort of bird, watching for cats. The stout man, Basil Gil, dropped his belongings and leaped a foot in the air.
"Why, Perrin," he stammered, snatching off the straw hat.
Sweat made tracks in the dust on his cheeks. He bent to pick up his bundle, changed his mind, and straightened again hastily.
"I mean, Lord Perrin, I thought it was you, but with him calling you Lord, I wasn't sure you'd want to know an old innkeeper."
Scrubbing a handkerchief across his nearly bald head, he laughed nervously.
"Of course I'll talk to you. Washing can wait a little longer."
"Hello, Perrin," the hulking man said.
With his heavy-lidded eyes, Lam Gwyn Dorn appeared lazy despite his muscles and the scars on his face and hands.
"We heard about young Rand being the dragon reborn, Master Gil and me. Should have figured you'd have come up in the world, too. Perrin Ibarra's a good man, Mistress Magdan. I think you could trust him with anything you've a mind to."
He was not lazy, and he was not stupid, either. Aram jerked his head impatiently, and Lam Gwyn and the other two followed, but Talanvor and Balwar dragged their feet, casting wondering glances back at Perrin and Master Gil. Concerned glances. And at the women. Fael had them moving again as well, though with plenty of darted looks at Perrin and Master Gil, at the men trailing Aram. Suddenly they were not so pleased at being separated. Master Gil mopped his forehead and smiled uneasily. Light, why did he smell afraid, Perrin wondered. Of him? Of a man tied to the dragon reborn, calling himself Lord and leading an army, however small, threatening the prophet? Might as well throw gagging Aes Sedai into it, too. He would take the blame for that, one way or another. No, Perrin thought wryly. Nothing in that to frighten anybody. The whole lot of them were probably afraid he might murder them all. Trying to put Master Gil at ease, he led the man to a large oak 100 paces from the red and white tent. Most of the great tree's leaves were gone, and half those left were brown, but massive limbs spreading low provided a little shade, and some of the gnarled roots stood high enough to serve as benches. Perrin had used one for just that, twiddling his thumbs while camp was being set. Whenever he tried to do anything useful, there were always 10 hands snatching it away from him. Basil Gil was not eased. However much Perrin asked after the Queen's blessing, his inn in Camelin, or recalled his own visit there. But then perhaps Gil was remembering that that visit was not the thing to calm a man, with Aes Sedai and talk of the Dark One, and a flight in the night. He paced anxiously, and hugged his bundle to his chest, shifted it from one arm to the other, and answered in a bare handful of words, licking his lips between.
"Master Gil," Perrin told him finally, "stop calling me Lord Perrin. I'm not. It's complicated, but I'm not a lord. You know that."
"Of course,"
the round man replied, at last seating himself on one of the oak roots. He appeared reluctant to set his bundled things down, drawing his hands from them slowly.
"As you say, Lord Perrin, Rand, the Lord Dragon, he really means the Lady Elaine to have the throne? Not that I doubt your word, of course," he added hurriedly.
Pulling off his hat, he began mopping his forehead again. Even for such a round man, he seemed to be sweating twice as much as the heat called for.
"I'm sure the Lord Dragon will do just as you say."
His laugh was shaky.
"You wanted to talk to me, and not about my old inn, I'm sure."
Perrin exhaled wearily. He had thought nothing could be worse than old friends and neighbors bowing and scraping, but at least they forgot sometimes and spoke their minds, and none of them was afraid of him.
"You're a long way from home," he said in a gentle voice.
No need to go too fast, not with a man ready to jump out of his skin.
"I wondered what brought you here. Not troubles of any kind, I hope."
"You tell him right, Basil Gill," Linny said sharply, marching up to the oak. "No embroidery, mind."
She had not been gone very long, yet somehow she found time to wash her face and hands and work her hair into a neat white bun on the back of her head, and to beat most of the dust from her plain woolen dress. Bobbing a perfunctory curtsy in Perrin's direction, she turned to shake a gnarled finger at Gill.
"Three things annoy to distraction. A tooth that aches, a shoe that pinches, and a man that chatters. So you hold to the point and don't go telling the young lord more than he wants to hear."
For a moment she held the gaping innkeeper with an admonitory stare, then abruptly gave Perrin another quick curtsy.
"He does love the sound of his own voice. Most men do. But he'll tell it to you properly now, my lord."
Master Gill glowered at her and muttered under his breath when she waved sharply for him to speak.
"Bony old,"
was what Perrin heard.
"What happened? The simple and straight of it?"
The round man glared at Linny again, but she did not appear to notice.
"Was that I had some business down in Lucard. A chance to import wine. But you're not interested in that. I took Lamgwyn along, of course, and Brianna, because she won't let him out of her sight an hour she doesn't have to. Along the way we met Mistress Dorlane, Mistress Megden, as we call her, and Linny and Tallinvor, and Bulwer, of course, on the road, near to Lugard. Megden and I were in service in Murindy," Linny put in impatiently, "until the troubles. Tallinvor was an armsman to the house, and Bulwer the secretary. Bandits burned the manor, and our lady couldn't afford to keep us, so we decided to travel together for protection." "I was telling it, Linny," Master Gill grumbled, scratching behind his ear. "The wine merchant had left Lugard for the country for some reason, and—"
He shook his head.
"It's all too much to go into, Perrin. Lord Perrin, I mean. Forgive me. You know there's trouble everywhere nowadays, one kind or another. Seems like every time we ran from one kind, we found another, and always getting further from Camelin. Till here we are, tired and grateful for a rest. And that's the short of it."
Perrin nodded slowly.
That could be simple truth, though he had learned that people had 100 reasons for lying, or just shading the truth.
Grimacing, he raked fingers through his hair. Light. He was becoming suspicious as a Kyrianin. And the deeper Rand tangled him, the worse it got. Why on earth would Basil Gill, of all people, lie to him? A lady's maid, accustomed to privilege and fallen on hard times? That explained Megden. Some things were simple. Lenny's hands were folded at her waist, but she watched with a keen eye, no little like a falcon herself, and Master Gill began fidgeting as soon as he stopped talking. He seemed to take Perrin's grimace as a demand for more. He laughed, more on edge than amused.
"I haven't seen so much of the world since the Aiel War, and I was considerably skinnier then. Why, we've been as far as Amador. Of course we left after those Shonchan took the city, but truth, they aren't any worse than the White Cloaks that I could—"
He cut off as Perrin leaned forward abruptly and seized his lapel.
"Shonchan, Master Gill, are you sure of that? Or is it one of those rumors like the Aiel or Aes Sedai?"
"I saw them," Gil replied, exchanging uncertain looks with Linny. "And that's what they call themselves. I'm surprised you don't know. Word's been running ahead of us all the way from Amador. The Shonchan want people to know what they're about. Strange people with strange creatures."
His voice picked up intensity.
"Like Shadowspawn. Big, leathery things that fly and carry men. And these things like lizards. Only they're big as horses. And they have 3 eyes. I saw them. I did."
"I believe you," Perrin said, releasing the man's coat. "I've seen them, too.
At Falma, where 1,000 White Cloaks died in minutes, and it had taken dead heroes of legend, called by the Horn of Valir, to throw the Shonchan back. Rand had said they would return, but how could they have so soon?
Light.
If they held Amador, they had to have Tarabon as well, or most of it. Only a fool killed a deer when he knew there was a wounded bear behind his back.
How much had they taken?
I can't send you to Camelin right away, Master Gil, but if you stay with me a while longer, I'll see you there safely. If staying with him any length of time was safe. The Prophet, White Cloaks, and now maybe Shonchan added in.
I think you're a good man, Linny said suddenly. I'm afraid we didn't tell you the whole truth, and maybe we should.
Linny, what are you saying?
Master Gil exclaimed, bounding to his feet.
I think the heat's getting to her, he told Perrin. And all the travel. She has strange fancies sometimes. You know how old folks can get.
Hush now, Linny. Linny slapped away the hand he was trying to put over her mouth.
You mind yourself, Basil Gil. I'll old you.
Megden was running from Talinvor, in a manner of speaking, and he was chasing her. We all were. 4 days now, and near killing us and the horses both. Well, it's no wonder she doesn't know her own mind half the time. You men snarl up a woman's wits so she can hardly think, then you pretend you've done nothing at all. The lot of you ought to have your ears boxed on general principle. The girl's afraid of her own heart. Those two should be married, and the quicker the better.
Master Gil gaped at her, and Perrin was not sure his own mouth might not be hanging open.
I'm not certain I understand what it is you want of me, he said slowly, and the white-haired woman leaped in before he was well finished.
Don't pretend to be dense. I won't believe it in you for a moment. I can see you have more wits than most men. That's the worst habit you men have, making believe you don't see what's plain under your noses.
What had happened to all those curtsies? Folding thin arms across her chest, she eyed him sternly.
Well, if you must pretend, I'll set it out for you. This Lord Dragon of yours does whatever he wants, the way I hear. Your prophet picks out people and marries them on the spot. Very well. You snatch up Megden and Talinvor and marry them. He'll thank you, and so will she, when her mind settles.
Stunned, Perrin glanced at Master Gil, who shrugged and made a sickly grin.
If you will forgive me, Perrin told the frowning woman, I have some matters I must see to.
He hurried away, only looking back once, Linny shaking a finger at Master Gil, berating him despite his protests. The breeze was wrong for Perrin to hear what they were saying. In truth, he did not want to. They were all crazy. Berylaine might have her two maids and her thief-catchers, but Fael had her own attendants, of a sort. Close on 20 young Tyrans in Kyrianen were sitting cross-legged near the tent, the women in coats and breeches with swords belted on, just like the men. None wore their hair longer than the shoulder, and men and women both had it tied back with a ribbon, imitating the Aiel tale. Perrin wondered where the rest were. They seldom strayed far from the sound of Aiel's voice. Not causing trouble, he hoped. She had taken them under her wing to keep them out of trouble, she said, and the light knew they would have gotten into it, left back in Carrion with a great lot of young fools just like them. In Perrin's opinion, the whole lashing of them needed a swift kick in the bottom to knock some sense into them. Dueling, playing at Giotto, pretending to be some sort of Aiel.
Idiocy.
Lucille rose to her feet as Perrin came closer. A pale little woman with red ribbons pinned to her lapels, small gold hoops in her ears, and a challenging stare that sometimes made the Two Rivers men think she might like a kiss, despite her sword. Right then the challenge was stony hard. A moment behind her, Arla stood too, tall and dark, with her hair cut short as a maiden's, and her clothes plainer than most of the men's. Unlike Lucille, Arla made it clear she would as soon kiss a dog as any man. The pair made as if to move in front of the tent to block Perrin's way, but a square-chinned fellow in a puffy-sleeved coat barked an order and they sat again. Reluctantly. For that matter, Perilion thumbed that block of a chin as though he might be reconsidering. He had worn a beard the first time Perrin saw him. Several of the Tyran men had had them, but Aiel did not wear beards. Perrin muttered about foolishness under his breath. They were Fael's to the bone, and the fact that he was her husband meant little. Aram might be jealous of his attentions, yet Aram at least shared his affections with Fael. He could feel the young idiot's eyes on him as he strode inside. Fael would skin him if she ever learned that he hoped they would keep her from trouble. The tent was tall and spacious, with a flowered carpet for a floor and sparse furnishings that folded for storage on a cart. Most of them. The heavy stand mirror certainly could not. Except for brass-bound chests draped with embroidered cloths and doubling as extra tables, straight lines of bright gilt decorated everything down to the washstand and its mirror. A dozen mirrored lamps made the interior nearly as bright as outside, if considerably cooler, and there were even a pair of silk hangings dangling from the roof poles, too ornate for Perrin's taste. Too rigid, with the birds and flowers marching in lines and angles. Dobrain had set them up to travel like Carrion and Nobles, though Perrin had managed to lose the worst of it. The huge bed, for one, a ridiculous thing to travel with. It had taken up almost a whole cart to itself. Fael and Megden were sitting alone together, worked silver cups in hand. They had the air of women feeling one another out, all smiles on the outside, yet with a hint of sharpness to the eyes, a hint of listening for something behind the words, and not a clue as to whether they would hug in the next instant or draw knives. Well, he thought most women would not actually go so far as knives, but Fael could. Megden appeared much less travel-worn than she had, washed and combed, the dust brushed from her dress. A small mosaic-topped table between them held more cups, and a tall, sweating silver pitcher that gave off the minty scent of herb tea. Both men looked around at his entrance, and for an instant they had almost exactly the same expression, coolly wondering who was barging in and not at all pleased with the interruption. At least Fael softened hers immediately with a smile. "Master Gil told me your story, Mistress Dorlane," he said. "You've faced hard days, but you can be sure you're safe here till you decide to leave." The woman murmured thanks over the rim of her cup, but she smelled wary and her eyes tried to read him like a book.
"Megden also told me their story, Perrin," Fael said, "and I have an offer to make her. Megden, you and your friends have had trying months behind, and you tell me of no prospects ahead. Enter my service, all of you. You will still have to journey, but the circumstances will be much better. I pay well, and I am not a harsh mistress."
Perrin voiced his approval immediately. If Fael wanted to indulge her fancy for taking in strays, at least he wanted to help this lot, too. Maybe they would be safer with him than wandering around alone at that. Choking on her tea, Megden nearly dropped her cup. She blinked at Fael, dabbing at the damp on her chin with a lace-edged linen handkerchief, and her chair creaked faintly as she turned, strangely, to study Perrin.
"I thank you," she said at last, slowly. "I think..."
Another moment's perusal of Perrin, and her voice picked up.
"Yes, I thank you, and I accept your kind offer gratefully. I must tell my companions."
Rising, she hesitated in setting her cup on the tray, then straightened only to spread her skirts in a curtsy suitable for any palace.
"I will try to give good service, my lady," she said levelly. "May I withdraw?"
At Fael's assent, she curtsied again and backed away two steps before turning to go. Perrin scratched his beard. Somebody else who would be bobbing at him every time she turned around. No sooner had the tent flap dropped behind Megden than Fael put her own cup down and laughed, drumming her heels in the carpet.
"Oh, I like her, Perrin. She has spirit. I'll wager she would have singed your beard over those banners if I hadn't saved you. Oh, yes, spirit."
Perrin grunted. Just what he needed, another woman to singe his beard. "I promised Master Gil to look after them, Fael, but can you guess what that Linny asked? She wanted me to marry Megden to that fellow Talanvor. Just stand them up and marry them, whatever they said. She claimed they want it." He filled a silver cup with tea and dropped into the chair Megden had vacated, ignoring its alarming groans under his sudden weight. "In any case, that nonsense is the least of my worries. Master Gil says it was the Shanchan took Armador, and I believe him. Blight, the Shanchan." Fael tapped her fingertips together, staring across them at nothing.
"That might be just the thing," she mused. "Most servants do better married than not. Perhaps I should arrange it. And for Brianna, too.
The way she went running out of here to check on that big fellow as soon as her face was clean, I suspect they should be already. There was a gleam in her eye. I won't have that kind of behavior in my servants, Perrin. It just leads to tears and recriminations and sulking. And Brianna will be worse than he is. Perrin stared at her.
"Did you hear me?" he said slowly. "The Seanchan have captured Amador."
"The Seanchan, Fail." She gave a start. She really had been thinking about marrying off those women. Then smiled at him, amused.
"Amador is a long way yet, and if we do meet with these Seanchan, I'm sure you will deal with them. After all, you taught me to perch on your wrist, didn't you?"
That was what she claimed, though he had never seen any sign of it.
"They might be a touch more difficult than you were," he said dryly, and she smiled again. She smelled extremely pleased for some reason.
"I'm thinking about sending Grady and Neil to warn Rand, no matter what he said." She shook her head fiercely, smiles evaporating, but he pushed on. "If I knew how to find him, I would. There has to be some way to get word to him without anyone learning of it." Rand had insisted on that, more than he had on secrecy about Massima. Perrin had been exiled from Rand's presence, and no one was to know anything remained between them except enmity.
"He knows, Perrin. I'm sure of it.
Magdan saw pigeon coats everywhere in Amador, and apparently the Seanchan didn't look at them twice. By this time, any merchant who has business with Amador has heard, and so has the White Tower. Believe me, Rand must have too.
You have to trust that he knows best. In this, he does."
She was not always so certain of that.
"Maybe," Perrin muttered irritably.
He tried not to worry about Rand's sanity, but Rand made Perrin at his most suspicious look like a child skipping in a meadow. How much did Rand trust even him? Rand kept things back, had plans he never let on. Exhaling, Perrin settled back in the chair, gulped a swallow of tea. The truth of it was, mad or sane, Rand was right. If the Forsaken caught a suspicion of what he was up to, or the White Tower did, they would find some way to overturn the anvil on his feet.